Chicago didn't know what was coming for it when Al Capone arrived, and it's never been the same since. The Tommy guns, the cars, the suits, the fedora hats, the money, and the prohibition booze. Al Capone had everything, and he didn't mind killing people to keep it. The most famous mob boss of them all, he was the gangster gold standard. This is the story of Al Capone, the real godfather. Alphonse Capone. Scarface is what they called him. Al Capone is probably the most famous gangster in history. And today, he is our focus on Blind History, the brand new season. Season 5. My co-host, as always, Anthony Medera, and it's good to see you. It's been a while. It feels like much longer than it actually has been.
Yeah, and it's great to be here. I get so excited when the new season starts.
Well, I'm excited because people have been hassling me about starting a new season, and I said, well, we've got to have meetings first and decide who we're actually going to talk about and all the rest of it. So we decided to start with a bad guy, which people love. I love the bad guys. This guy is way more interesting than I thought he was, as often happens when we research these guys. But he's not Scarface with Al Pacino. Say hello to my little friend. He's not that, but he's all kinds of other good stuff.
You know, the thing with Al Capone is he was such an enigma. He had such a different side to him. I mean, he was hectic family. He was a family man of the highest order. And so, you know, and he had this conscience that people said when, you know, just before he died, he was talking to all the people he'd killed and trying to ask for forgiveness. And
wow.
So he had a different side to him as well.
Well, we got to start somewhere with Al Capone. I mean, he was the son of immigrant Italian parents. He had about 10 brothers and sisters, and some of them got involved in the business with him later on, right?
Yeah, so you had, I think it was 9. One of them died at age 1, so maybe that was where the 10 came from.
Okay.
But yeah, so a lot of them did come into the business. Some of them got killed during the highest part of his life, or his career, as you might want to call it. But his parents weren't down and out. You know, his dad was a barber that came from Naples. His mom was a seamstress, and they had a big family, but generally a happy family, so they weren't broke. They literally came to New York 6 years before he was born. But it's just that where they moved to was rife with petty crime and racketeering.
Sure. I mean, so, we've seen so many movies about that time in New York.
Yeah.
And of course, it was pre-prohibition at that stage. But
Joseph Kennedy did that. I mean, well, let me rather say allegedly. But
allegedly. The place was still, the quickest way to make money was to do underworld things.
Yeah. But the thing with Al Capone was that he looked to be a promising student. He did well in his grades. And, okay, so he left in grade 6, which then at 4, which is quite young. And he was 14, which is maybe a concern.
Yeah, but why did he leave?
Because he smacked his teacher. So he obviously had some anger issues. But and his teacher was a lady. So I didn't, that didn't go
That's
down well.
That's not good.
No. These days,
I don't think that would go down very well either.
So then he basically, that was the last of his official education. But you'll see a play out later. He was very good with figures. He tried for a stint when Sonny was born, his only child. He went into a bookkeeping of something. He actually did like a legit
ledger.
But for a week or two.
So I'm interested. You say his son, Sonny, and I didn't really know about this at all. But Sonny was also the name of, you know, the character in The Godfather's son.
Yeah.
The eldest son who was gunned down famously in the first Godfather movie. And I wonder how much of those movies they did base on Al Capone's life. Because if you look at the caricature of a gangster in Prohibition America, the pinstriped suits, the
fedora,
the hairstyle, the hat, all of that stuff, the way he spoke, it became like the model for all the others. And we've spoken about John Gotti and Blind History before. But really, John Gotti was like a much more modern, pale comparison
100%.
Of what Al Capone was.
Well, John Gotti wouldn't last a month in Capone's time.
No, and of course these guys had the Tommy guns, and you know, they would actually take out their enemies in the street.
And the police. They were really a different breed.
So how did it all start with Al? Where did he begin in New York?
So he started getting involved in small gangs. So they were young kids running around. And then he actually met his mentor, which is Johnny Torrio. And Johnny Torrio was part of his life big time until Johnny Torrio said he had enough and went back to Italy.
But he said he had enough because they tried to shoot him.
Yeah, but this is now, they're still in New York, and there's another guy called Frankie Gale, and they really were his mentors. They owned brothels and pubs, bars, And Al was actually quite a strong individual. He was around 6 foot, but strong, like 110 kilograms. So he was a powerful guy, and he started bouncing. Mm-hmm. That's actually where he got his scar from. He was bouncing the one night actually at Frankie Yale's bar, and this pretty girl came into the bar, and he really took a liking to her. But her brother was hectic, and they just got full of drink, and he kept saying, you know, he kept going there, and she just kept batting him off. So he said in the end, honey, you got a nice ass on you. So the brother had enough. So he came at him, and he took his knife out, and he slashed at Al, and he cut him.
On the cheek.
Yeah, right down on the cheek. And he could, if it wasn't for them reacting quickly, he would have died from it.
Now, he never liked being called Scarface.
He hated it. He even said that he got his scar from World War One.
So he was embarrassed about it.
And his whole life, it was he hated Scarface. If somebody called him Scarface.
And he used to never show that side of his face in pictures.
Yeah. But that's where he grew up. And he got involved in some, allegedly as well, he killed two people. And the heat started building a bit with him because he was really a larger than life individual already at the age of 16, 18 years old. And so the heat started building, and, you know, Johnny Turia had already moved to Chicago, and they think that Johnny needed to get rid of his boss. He was the underboss in the Chicago outfit. And Big Jim, there's always Big Jim, Big Larry, Big whatever.
What these names.
Yeah, right? So he wanted help, and he needed a hitman like Al. So
he invited him to Chicago.
So he went to Chicago, but I think Al tried to go straight, like I said, for like a day or two, where he became a bookkeeper. And those numbers, he used to run the numbers. He was very sharp when he finally got up to Chicago.
So when he went to Chicago, I mean, what's interesting here is, first of all, he made one big enemy in his life, and this guy was just obsessed with trying to kill him. And he managed to thwart this. We'll tell the whole story about him in a second, Aiello. But before we get to him, in Chicago, he was primarily involved in brothels, liquor, and racketeering.
Yeah.
You know, basically saying to people, you need our protection, or we're going to burn down your shop.
So the racketeering, 100% protectionism.
Yeah, right.
And getting stuck into politicians. He hated politicians. He said if you find a good lawman, and that's an honest lawman, you just need to get him moved to another district so he's not in your way.
Yeah.
But he says that
he would do very well in South Africa now.
Very well.
Yeah.
He used to call the politicians swell snakes. So whatever that meant. Yeah. But
wasn't a compliment.
No, it wasn't a compliment. And he actually had no respect for them. And I think that made it easier for him.
Now, what did he get into this fight with Aiello about? Because this was the guy who he had probably the longest running dispute with.
Yeah, I think it was related to the biggest rivals in Chicago.
Antonio Lombardo. He was made the head of that society, right? And then Joe Aiello, who actually wanted that position, he believed Capone was responsible for this guy getting the position. And that was where it all started.
Yeah.
But this Aiello guy sent, like, I don't know, 10, maybe 20 different people in different situations to try and kill Al Capone. And every time something saved him. He either found out about it, someone spilled the beans on Aiello's plan. He managed to have someone who was faster and quicker. He just somehow escaped every time. It must have driven this other guy mad.
But what he had to do, though, when that started happening with Aiello, that's when he started having the bodyguards.
Okay.
He always used to say, I don't have weapons on me. Always. I'm a businessman.
Yeah.
And I give people what they want.
That's it.
But he had bodyguards, like proper. And you only travel at night. And if he took the train, take out the whole train.
So he booked really the entire train.
Yeah, so he had to really protect himself. And I think Johnny Turia couldn't handle it anymore because he was, you know, they were together. So he was the big boss, Johnny, and Al Capone was basically his right-hand man. And the pressure was just too much for Johnny. So, you know, there's some reports say he went to jail and then went to Italy, and some reports say he just went to Italy. Because they took him out, he went to hospital. And when he was in his hospital bed, he said, Al, you take all of it.
Didn't want it anymore.
Yeah, so it was a lot of pressure. But what Al tried to do is he needed to get control of Chicago. So he took out, there was a gang, the Northside Gang.
Yes.
And Steon O'Banion was the one that was running it. But he also loved flowers, this guy. So he was a genuine gangster.
Who loved flowers.
Yeah, and then he got murdered while he was trimming his chrysanthemums or something.
This is such a movie scene.
Yeah, and genuinely, he was murdered in his flower shop. And there was a subsequent one of his sidekicks were murdered outside the flower shop. They actually called it the flower shop.
Wow.
And obviously, they became more sophisticated. So Johnny Torrio really started making gangland more sophisticated. You had to have a front, you know, so you didn't, you know.
But, I mean, Chicago at this stage, and kind of forevermore, because Chicago is still seen as a you know, a gangster city. It's still, there's an underworld there when the police and the media and the crooks all are kind of in cahoots at some point. But that all started with Al Capone. What was the St. Valentine's Day massacre? Because that was where public love for him turned into public hatred for him.
If I can just go a step back, because it already started, these names started turning, you know, where the people didn't love him so much was when he beat up the editor of the newspaper in Chicago.
Okay.
And that frustrated him so much, and then it escalated to the St. Valentine's Day massacre. But what happened with this individual, his surname was St. John, and you'd get these people in the world that said, now I'm going to stand up against crime, people like Al Capone. And so he stood up against him to such an extent that his brothel was burnt down. He was very upset when his brothel was burnt down. And so he
wouldn't you be?
Yeah, 100%. Anyway, so he decided to teach him a lesson so that he beat him up to the inch of his life.
Oof.
But there were cops around that didn't do anything. So this guy went into a ball screaming, and he was in hospital for 2 weeks. And then when on his way out, somebody paid his bill. And they thought that somebody that was, you know,
family or friend.
Yeah, or, you know, and also sympathetic to people standing up against Capone. And it was Capone that paid his bill.
He paid the bill, huh?
He paid the bill.
For the damage he'd inflicted.
Exactly. But he said, I don't care. I'm going to go after Capone. So he went after him still. So then the cops, says, so he went to the cops, you need to do something. So the cops said to him, come in tomorrow morning and we're going to discuss how we're going to get Capone. They came in. He went into a private room. And who was sitting there with his fedora hat?
Al Capone.
He was sitting there on his own. He took out hundreds of thousands of dollars or hundreds of dollar bills. And St. John said, I'm still not. So Capone, you know, this guy was really upstanding. So he just bought the newspaper and they got rid of
wow.
the editor. But so much had been written about Al Capone that the tide had turned.
Yeah.
And so people started seeing him as this murderer and a thug. And
but, I mean, he did take – he wasn't the murderer himself, but he ordered the killings.
Correct.
Or there is the story of him with a baseball bat smashing in two people's heads.
Yeah.
Which some people say is true, some people say isn't. But either way, it added to the infamy of his name. And the St. Valentine's Day massacre was just a step too far. They just killed too many people on one day.
Correct. And they lined them up on a wall.
Yeah, I mean, they pretended to be cops.
Yeah.
It was all very, very ugly. And I think probably even the most, let's say, the kind of people who are charmed by gangsters. And we've all watched these movies. Mm. And some of these gangsters are very alluring personalities, right? And Al Capone was probably the biggest personality in Chicago of that time.
Or in America.
Sure, maybe in America. And even that was not enough to save him at that point. And he had to also spend a lot of time running between Florida, Tennessee, Texas. He'd be all over the country because he was becoming paranoid too. He thought there were probably a lot of people who were trying to kill him. And he had good reason to think that.
Yeah. You know that he would say, famously he would say that if a cat falls out the tree, if somebody gets killed in a car accident, it's Capone did it. And then he'd also say, if somebody was killed in the World War, get Capone. Get Capone. That's all everybody ever said. He said it. He said, everybody just wants to get me for anything that goes wrong in this world.
So how did they eventually get him? It was tax.
Tax evasion. So there was a prosecutor, the hangman prosecutor, who was also trying to get Capone. And he was shot by mistake by Capone's crew. And then the heat just got too much. He had to leave town, and then they started catching him. Then,
but they did arrest him a few times on
but for
like,
vagrancy.
Yeah, really
carrying a gun.
Stupid charges that didn't give him a long time in jail, or most of them he could shirk off.
But they started finding slips of paper that didn't add up in terms of the tax. Then they turned his bookkeepers against him, and he went down. Yeah, he ran out of tricks. You could see from about 1930 onwards, it just got worse and worse. And there were some individuals that became famous for that took him down.
Elliot Ness.
Agreed. You saw that in the movie The Untouchables.
Correct.
So that was a big part of, you know, these young guys that were incorruptible.
Now, I didn't know this, but he actually ended up in Alcatraz, which was new. It was newly built. And he was one of the prisoners in Alcatraz. He was also in the band while he was in prison. He played the banjo, I think.
Yeah, he was.
And he loved jazz music. He used to protect jazz singers when they came to Chicago. He give them bodyguards, make sure that they could stay in the best hotels, all of that kind of thing. So he did have a little bit of culture in him.
He was immaculately dressed, always pinstripe suits, polished shoes, hat, and he treated his wife absolute gold. Look, he got syphilis from showgirls.
The prostitutes.
Prostitutes. Yeah. But she never saw that as a problem because she knew that it didn't impact on the family. But what was quite sad, this part of his life was quite sad for
me. I found it very sad because I didn't even know that he actually died at home. I thought that somehow he died in prison, but he was eventually released because he'd started to lose it. I mean, by the time he died, they say he had the mental capacity of like a 12-year-old. Mm. But he had this syphilis, which was a neurosyphilis, so it had started to make his brain kind of fall apart. And he went back to, ultimately, he went to some asylum where they kind of tried to treat him. And he was one of the first people in the world to receive penicillin at that point, which I think was quite revolutionary. But, of course, the disease had spread so far that they couldn't really save him. And he went to stay in Florida, in Palm Beach, for the last few years of his life.
So he bought that massive estate in Palm Beach, and at the heart of his career, they say it was worth $100 million. If you can imagine $100 million wow. in 1920.
That's a lot of money.
And you know that supposedly Joseph Kennedy made huge money out of bootlegging, and a lot of people made massive amounts of money. If you can just look at our current situation under COVID, and you look at cigarettes, and you start seeing all the sidelines that start popping up, and alcohol. So he made a lot of money. So when they put him away, they put him in a normal penitentiary, and he took over. He apparently had a carpeted cell. Yeah. You could watch, you know.
I saw a picture of his cell. He had lamps on tables. He had a little writing bureau. He had paintings.
Everything. Everything under control. Because obviously he had to pay the tax man $50,000 fine. It was a joke to him. So he had a lot of money. But then what they said, no, this can't work. So they sent him to this new prison. It used to be a military base that was run precisionally. Yeah. They didn't care who you were. So Al Capone had a strategy at Alcatraz. Stay out of trouble, get out in good behavior. And ultimately, he did leave after 6 years. He got out in good behavior.
But he did have someone to protect him in there as well. There was one of the other gangsters who'd worked with him.
But he got badly hurt in the laundry when he had to do laundry duty. They nearly killed him. He was spent so much time in hospital. And what they did in Alcatraz, they don't care. Both people that are fighting, they put you in the hole. And he was put in the hole, and that mentally, that broke his spirit. Al Capone's spirit was broken in the hole. And that was sad to see. So this guy, you know, like I said, 6 foot, 130 kilograms at that stage, biggest gangster American ever known. They put him in a hole. He was finished. He spent a week in this black hole, and he didn't really recover from that. And then mentally started going sideways with the syphilis. So they let him out after 6 years, but straight into a hospital, like an asylum.
The one hospital actually turned him away because they said, he's too infamous. Mm. We can't handle that. We don't want him in our ward.
So the last 7 or 8 years of his life was quite stable. And he was in Florida, and his grandchildren, so Sonny had four daughters, and he loved his granddaughters, and he spent the last 7 years of his life, such a special time, and the FBI just said, you know, it's another family occasion for the Capones, another this for the Capones. He was doing nothing. I mean, his brother said to him, let's go back to Chicago, then he got excited, but his brain was cooked. Yeah. So,
well, ironically, the Chicago criminal underworld continued pretty much as it had been without Al Capone. In fact, they probably even grew their share of the market.
Correct.
But they weren't attracting as much attention, which was all the politicians were really after. And he lived large. I mean, didn't he also have his nasal septum was ruined from cocaine?
Could have been, yeah. 100%.
Yeah, and he drank heavily.
Yeah.
And, of course, the syphilis didn't help. So some of it's inevitable.
Yeah.
You kind of would have expected it. But what a life. I mean, really, the guy lived large. He was the prototype gangster. There's no one who comes close.
And what he did was he should lock up all areas. So when he got a lot of heat out of Chicago, he moved to Cicero, which is a town just down the road. But when you talk about voter intimidation that we often see in Africa and that, you know, in some of the governments, if they didn't want to vote for his crew, they'd murder or kidnap them. He would kill the guys. Fear and intimidation was what he was about.
Incredible. You gave that the quote earlier on. He said, I'm just a businessman. I give people what they want.
Exactly.
It's probably the most famous thing he said. Al Capone, a gangster, proper gangster. Don't believe these modern day, you know, also-rans. This guy was the real deal. Blind History is brought to you by Taylor Blinds and Shutters. All the episodes are available on the cliffcentral.com website and app, as well as Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
There's conspiracy theories all around Chicago that Frank Sinatra was very close to these guys, to the outfit. And Frank Sinatra introduced the outfit to Joseph Kennedy.
Oh, wow.
Conspiracy theory.
Oh, wow.
Then Joseph Kennedy wanted to ensure that they got the Chicago ticket.
Mm-hmm.
And they say, inverted commas, we got you into the White House. And so they got Jack Kennedy into the White House. But then what happened was they say, once again, that Jack and Bobby crossed them during their tenure and they took them out. But that's a whole different story.